What's going on down south? Seriously, I'm really asking, what is happening to the black women and girls down there? As mentioned in previous episodes, the FBI reported in 2020 that a black woman or girl was murdered every 6 hours. Well, as I have very recently come to learn after listening to an interview of the founder of Black Femicide, Rosa Page, that now that 6 hours has decreased to 5.5 hours. So every 5.5 hours now, a black woman or girl is murdered. But the more I look into a lot of these stories, the more I realize that a lot of this stuff is happening in the South. Now, I don't know if that's just because there are a lot of black people in the South or if there's something else going on, because there's so much of this. From Texas to North Carolina and every southern state between and surrounding, black women and girls are reported missing or murdered daily. Even 8 episodes of this podcast have featured the gut-wrenching stories about women and girls from southern cities who were missing or were killed. And sadly, today's episode is no different. When 32-year-old Ella Goody accepted a request to drive someone from Lafayette, Louisiana to Houston, Texas, everyone expected it to be a quick turnaround trip. But Ella never returned, and her disappearance sparked a large tri-state investigation. I'm Renetta Rideout, and this is Massage Noir Murders. On Wednesday, March 9th, 2022, 32-year-old Ella Goody prepared to get on the road to Houston. She's an independent rideshare driver and she'd just booked a long-distance fare. A man got in touch with Ella and asked if she'd take him from the Lafayette area of Louisiana to Houston, Texas, which is about 3.5 hours west of Scott, which is where Ella lives with her family. After discussing the details of the ride, Ella agreed to take the man to Houston. He is 36-year-old Brandon Francisco. With the terms of the ride ironed out, Ella informed her family about her plans and told her kids, two teenagers, to expect her home by the time they got out of school. So early on that Wednesday morning, Ella got in her black 2012 Audi Q5 during the early morning hours. Now, before I get too far into this story, I need to warn you that the details in this case are not clear. While Ella has received quite a bit of local and regional press coverage, and law enforcement has been visibly investigating, investigators have decided to be very tight-lipped about the specifics of this case. What has been released is vague and without detail. The police have said several times that this is an ongoing and very active investigation, and they cannot divulge too much information without jeopardizing the case. So, like usual, please bear with me as I lay out what I have been able to learn. Ella's Aunt Rose told KATC that Ella spoke to her daughter that morning on March 9th to make sure she and her brother got themselves to school and reminded her that she'd be home before school was over. But when the kids got out of school, Ella wasn't home. I'm sure that was weird because, from the impression I've developed based on what I've read about Ella, it sounds like she was a dependable woman. If she told her daughter she'd be home by a certain time, she'd make sure to be there at that time. And if she couldn't be there, she'd call at the very least. But Ella wasn't there, and there was no phone call. Again, I don't know what happened play by play, but I imagine that her kids started calling and calling her, and when they couldn't reach her, let their family members know something was wrong. On March 12th, Ella's sister-in-law, who I'll call Tina for this episode, said on a Facebook post that the family last spoke to Ella around noon on March 9th. Tina shared that their family had been searching for Ella for 3 days unsuccessfully, and they were very worried about her well-being. Tina conveyed that the whole situation was surreal, and she really wanted people to share the post in an effort to help locate Ella. Unfortunately, that post has since been deleted, so I couldn't read any of the comments for more details, but the screenshot of the post provided the public with the first glimpse into the family's nightmare. After Tina's post, Ella's story hit social media hard. Hashtag Ella Goody began to circulate, and communities in and surrounding Scott and Lafayette wanted to know where Ella was. But the more Ella's name was circulated, the more questions swirled around another name, the name belonging to the guy she took to Houston, Brandon Francisco. Who exactly was he, and where was he now? All Ella's family knew was that she used to drive Ford Lift, but began working independently, and she booked this ride to Houston for a guy who lived in Lafayette. But they didn't know much about him. They didn't even know if Ella knew the guy or exactly how he came to book the ride with her. Her uncle said in that same interview I mentioned before that Ella accepted rideshare fares independently, so it's not like Lyft would have a record of this. Now, I don't know when exactly the police began investigating Ella's disappearance, but by March 14th, the Scott Police Department released Ella's physical description to the press and asked that everyone with information contact them. It included her general description, which is 5 feet 3 inches tall, 168 pounds, and she was last seen wearing a denim jacket and blue pants. The bulletin also described her car, a black Audi Q5. This first news report really only served to notify the public that Ella was missing. But a little more than a week after Ella disappeared, and the police were back in the press with an update. This time, they needed the public's help to locate 36-year-old Brandon Francisco. Turns out, Brandon had a whole warrant out for his arrest for skipping court on Wednesday, March 9th, the same day that Ella went missing. This court date was for his connection during an armed robbery back in 2018. Here's a 43-second recap of those charges, courtesy of KLB NBC News.
We begin with breaking news. The Rapids Parish Sheriff's Office has arrested two people in connection to the Christmas Eve shooting south of Cheneyville that left a person in critical condition. 33-year-old Brandon Jermaine Francisco and 30-year-old Travell Marquez Lewis, both from Mansoura, have been charged with a number of crimes, including attempted first-degree murder and armed robbery. Both suspects were taken into custody without incident and remain in jail at this time. Detectives say their investigation is still ongoing. Lewis's bond is set at more than $800,000. Francisco's bond has not been set as of now. Back on Christmas Eve, several law enforcement agencies responded to an area near the 11600 block of U.S. 71 South. The victim had several gunshot wounds and was transported to a local hospital.
Okay, so I know that was a lot of information, but I wanted you to get a clear picture of the charges already pending against Brandon Francisco. When you consider he was the last person known to be with Ella, he was also due in court on that same day that she was last seen. It doesn't really take a genius to guess that Brandon was up to no good when he hired Ella to drive him. And all of that makes police want to question him more. But where was he? And how would they, a small police department, find him? Herein enters the FBI and the U.S. Marshals Service with all their fancy federal access. The Scott Police Department called in federal assistance along with Louisiana State Troopers to widen their efforts to find Ella and Brandon, and it paid off. On March 18th, Police Chief Scott Ledger told KATC3 News that they did identify Ella's vehicle on Highway 10 in the early morning hours of March 9th. Now, that's the least of the information, and it's good information to have. But what I was surprised to learn was that her car was actually recorded driving back into Louisiana towards Lafayette 12 hours later. But then the chief said that 12 hours after Ella's car was heading towards Lafayette, it was then recorded in Texas north of Dallas, which is almost 7 hours northwest from Lafayette. I cannot help but wonder who or what was so important that whoever was driving Ella's car risked the long drive past Dallas. And where were they going? It honestly didn't make any sense at the time. Now, by this time, as you can imagine, the Goody family is desperate for answers, and they reached out to any and everyone who was willing to help, including the Lafayette chapter of the NAACP and the local activist group Village 337, who helped the family spread the word and drum up interest about the case in the media. The NAACP and Village 337 have both provided representation on behalf of Ella's family, which is so helpful. Having professionals available for public comment keeps the family from being bombarded for interviews that could ultimately cause more harm than good. Anyway, before anyone knew it, Ella's picture was all over the news channels in the area and in surrounding communities, and everyone committed to finding her. Bass Limited, a local sign company, even agreed to post Ella's picture and a description of her vehicle on an LED billboard right on the I-10 West Freeway. Regular people even organized independent searches, hoping to be the heroes who would find Ella and bring her home. And Facebook groups dedicated to discussing Ella's case were created. But despite all these efforts, as the days passed, none of the community's hard work had brought Ella home. Suddenly, social media erupted with claims that Ella had been spotted in a profile picture on Facebook. And hear me when I say that folks were convinced that this person, whom you can hardly even see, was Ella. Honestly, I can't even do a decent job of describing it, but for the sake of this podcast, I'll do my best. So it's dark in the picture, and it's a portrait of a guy front and center wearing a white sweatshirt with Louisiana in blue across the front. He's wearing a blue cap with a white K on it. It almost looks like the guy is in a vehicle and he's taking a selfie that shows through the back window. I can see a street light in the background along with what looks like a string of twinkle lights. On the left side of the picture is what appears to be a light-skinned woman with her face tilted upward, and it looks like her eyes are closed or maybe she's looking down. It also looks like someone is on top of her or in front of her, but you can only see the back of this person's head if it's even a person. Now, looking at the picture, it looks like the man is hugging or maybe kissing the woman. You can only see a quarter of the woman's face, if that much, and you can't see the face of the person on top of her or in front of her. So it's really hard to make a determination based on this picture, but that's what people were doing. I'll include the link to this picture so that you can look at it for yourself. But like I said, folks were convinced. And they became so convinced that KLFY 10 News actually did a whole report on this very subject with the headline, quote, "Social media photo ignites hope for missing Scott woman," end quote. The woman in the picture looks like she's the same complexion as Ella and has a similar eye shape, but like I said, it's impossible to be sure from that tiny snippet. But everyone argued and speculated about every tiny detail of this picture. They debated whether or not the people were photoshopped, or were they in a car, or were they in a club? No, wait, they were in a tent. I mean, folks got granular, okay? They started hurling all sorts of wild theories and flat-out accusations. People even said that the guy front and center in the picture is Brandon Francisco's cousin, which I was actually unable to confirm. Whether or not it's true doesn't actually matter a whole lot. The point is, I can see how this type of gossip can be problematic to all parties involved in the investigation. The virtual chisme began to put a strain on the actual investigation. So Ella's family asked Devon Norman from Village 337 to make a statement on their behalf to Channel 10 News. They basically said to stop pointing the finger at people because rumors interfered with the investigation. Of course, the family's gratitude was conveyed, but it was made clear that people should direct their genuine tips to the police directly and to otherwise not spread unsubstantiated rumors. And to my surprise, people actually listened. So, random side note, when I began looking into this story, I was so surprised to see the groups that were created on Facebook had large memberships, but there wasn't a lot of chatter. I thought it was so strange, especially after what I've seen recently in other Facebook groups for missing people. When I found out about this statement, though, I understood why it was so quiet. I have to give it to the people of these communities because they really did fall back. The respect for Ella and her family was on full display, and I have to say, I really love that. Anyway, I digress, as usual. On the afternoon of March 25th, the U.S. Marshals Service received a tip from a caller who claimed to have information regarding the whereabouts of Brandon Francisco. I don't know the specifics about the tip, but I do know that the caller believed law enforcement would be able to locate Brandon near St. Joseph, Missouri, of all places. Totally random, and a whole 9 hours north of Dallas, which is where Ella's car was last picked up, on surveillance. As random and far-fetched as the tip was, it turned out to be right on the money. Brandon Francisco was pulled over and arrested based on that warrant out of Rapides Parish for skipping court back on March 9th. He also picked up a new charge of unlawful possession of a firearm. News reports later said Brandon initially resisted arrest, but his resistance proved futile and he was taken into custody. With Brandon finally arrested, police hoped to get some answers about what happened after Ella picked him up. I can only guess how the interviews with Brandon have gone because police have remained tight-lipped, and I mean ironclad, and have not shared any specifics about their conversations with him to the public at all. But you will be so happy to learn that they are keeping the family up to date, and really that's all that matters. But whatever Brandon has or hasn't said specifically remains a mystery. 1 week after Brandon's arrest, the St. Joseph Police Department found Ella's Audi Q5. When news about the car went public, everyone anxiously awaited the police to announce what they had found inside the vehicle. But that announcement never came. What we do know is that Ella was not in her car. We have no idea whether the car was damaged in any way or what evidence was present, but State Trooper Derek Senegal said that the next steps would be to comb through Ella's car looking for any clue that could be useful in finding her. Now, it's not lost on anyone that this car was found in the exact same random town that Brandon was arrested in. I don't buy that it was just some weird coincidence, and neither do the police. Here's Trooper Senegal telling Britt LaFosso for KLFY Channel 10 News.
I mean, a vehicle is just an object, just a thing, but we'd rather find a person wherever she's at. Of course, like I said, we find a vehicle that's good on the investigation part, and now we just have to continue with that. Like I say, sometimes the evidence or clues lead to other things, you know, like I say, maybe it could just lead to her and figure out where she is.
See what I mean? Really tight lip, right? However, one thing was for sure. Law enforcement was committed to leaving no stone unturned on the mission to find Ella. On April 7th, Brandon Francisco was extradited back to Rapides Parish, Louisiana. Even though he's a person of interest in Ella's disappearance, the police haven't officially charged him with anything involving Ella, and this extradition pertains to that March 9th court date he skipped out on. The police are pretty much using this opportunity of him being in custody on unrelated charges to their advantage. At the very least, they know where he is and where he will be, so talking to him will be easy peasy. Well, at least their access to him. Ultimately, the police need more information to be able to officially name anyone as a suspect, including Brandon. So let's fast forward a couple of weeks to April 18th, and all of a sudden, the investigation makes its way to Iowa, which I found out is actually pronounced that way locally, which is another city in Louisiana, where Ella's cell phone last pinged. Iowa is about an hour east of Lafayette, on the way to Houston. Now, this was big news, huge in fact, and it was an all-hands-on-deck scenario. Trooper Senegal said in another interview that multiple agencies were involved in a 50-mile search radius. I'm talking about state air support, the Louisiana Department of Wildlife Fisheries, and the Calcasieu Parish Sheriff's Department were all involved in the search. And the goal was simple, to find any evidence that would lead them to the next starting point. But whether or not they found anything of use still remains unknown. One thing's for sure though, Ella was not located. Law enforcement continued to search high and low for Ella. They even encouraged local property owners in those rural areas where Ella's phone pinged to search their own property for anything that looked suspicious or out of place. But as time progressed onward, Ella remained lost and missed by all who knew her. April continued with police's efforts, but as April's showers brought May flowers, the investigation into Ella's disappearance took a heartbreaking turn. On May 3rd, it was reported that Ella's case was officially transitioning from a missing persons investigation to a homicide. If you're surprised by that, well, you're not alone. To me, this news came out of left field, but that simply wasn't the case for investigators. According to the Louisiana State Troopers, police didn't change the status of the case arbitrarily. Police arrived at this conclusion based on all the evidence they've recovered so far, including witness statements. Now, I can only assume Brandon Francisco is one of those witnesses, although no other witnesses have been officially named. Everyone following the case pretty much assumed that Brandon started talking and told the police something that confirmed their suspicions that Ella was deceased. But again, this is just speculation because the police haven't confirmed who said what. Regardless of the reasoning behind the change of the direction in this case, and the fact that Ella's body has not been found, the police were convinced that Ella would not return home alive. Even as I record this episode, there has not been an update on Ella's case since May 3rd. Her family and friends are doing what they can to remain hopeful that answers will be provided and Ella will eventually come home. In the meantime, they are focused on caring for her children, whom I imagine are just crushed over the news about their mom. Ella was a devoted and doting mother who beamed with pride and radiated with love for her babies. I can't imagine how difficult this whole situation has been on the children, and I ask that listeners keep them and their family uplifted in prayer or positive vibes. I've also included a link to the family's GoFundMe page in the show notes. If you can spare a donation, no matter how big or small, please do. All donations are appreciated and will be used to help care for Ella's children and for associated costs of the ongoing recovery efforts for Ella. Unfortunately, this is where Ella's story ends for now, but her case is still very much active and ongoing. I truly believe that answers are on the horizon for this case. After everything that has been discovered so far, I know eventually closure will be had. I just hope it comes sooner than later for the sake of Ella's family. Stay tuned for episodes about this investigation as information becomes available. As always, thanks for listening. And thank you for the case suggestions. Please keep them coming, and we'll meet here again for the next episode of Massage and Law Murders. This is a Savvy Sounds production, written and produced by Renetta Rideout.